and Sanctuary with Emma Newman. Hello, my lovelies. I hope you're well. Welcome to episode 3, season 2 of Tea and Sanctuary. It's okay, you're safe now. Let's sit down. Let's talk about things which are lovely, or whatever comes into my mind. But I do try to keep things calm and lovely, nothing too scary. There's something I wanted to talk about today, which is someone I follow on Instagram. And I think she's probably on TikTok too, but I haven't gone there. That just, no, not gone to TikTok yet. Don't want to. No. Anyway, I'm not even that fond of Instagram. I have a real love-hate relationship with it. But anyway, the person I'm talking about has, I don't know, what do you call it on Instagram? A channel? Oh, I have no idea. Oh, good grief. I'm getting old, aren't I? I don't know what to call different things. But in fairness, I've really backed off from social media in a big way over the last year, just because everything's been going to hell in a handbasket. Anyway, her channel, whatever it is on Instagram, is called A Tall Glass of Anxiety. And she is a stuffed toy restorer. I'll put a link in the show notes. Honestly, if there's anything which is the purest, most wholesome thing in the world, it is watching somebody lovingly restore a stuffed toy which has been loved so much over its lifetime that it's falling apart. And people from all over America, I assume, maybe further away, send her their stuffed toy to restore. And her videos show her like taking it out of the box, and then she films the process of the restoration. And like several of them have just made me cry. It's ridiculous. But if you imagine, like, these, there's such a wide variety of stuffed toys, but, you know, you imagine the saddest looking, rat-eared, half-destroyed teddy bear being taken out of a box that's been loved so much that an eye has fallen out or an ear has fallen off, and that there are patches where there's no fur because he has been hugged so much all of his existence. It's so beautiful. And she repairs them. She like takes the stuffing out, which I find slightly distressing because I have very strong feelings about stuffed toys and how precious they are. But she does it with such a loving kind of narrative over the top. And you see them being washed, and then you see how she like patches bits and finds like a matching eye and gives them a new bow and puts new stuffing in, and she takes some of the old stuffing and puts them in like a little tiny fabric envelope and sews it closed with a button and says, oh, I'm just putting their memories back in. It's so adorable. I highly recommend going to find her videos because they are just so soothing and so wholesome. And sometimes she posts up like pictures of a person being reunited with their restored toy. And I watch them and I think to myself, Rover, who is mine, my lifelong companion, I think about him and you know, I'm 47. I had to think about that. I'm 47 years old. So he's 47 years old and however long he was on a shop shelf. But he was bought by my late grandfather, who was in Germany at the time that I was born, apparently. And he got the news, went straight out, bought Rover and gave him to me the first time he met me. And Rover has always been my favourite stuffed animal. And I have no idea where various teddy bears and things that I have loved dearly, I have no idea where they are now. I've moved house so many times in my life. I've lived in over like 30 houses. I have no idea where most of them have gone. But Rover is always with me. And when I watch these videos by this stuffed toy restorer, I look at Rover and I look at his face. He's this, I think he's supposed to be like a bulldog, but he's a long bulldog. I don't know. He's some kind of dog. And his, because of a whole lifetime of a kid and then for significant chunks of my adult life, me, an adult lying against him, one half of his face is all squashed. And there are patches on him that are worn. And, you know, I've done repairs over the years myself on one of his paws. The paw wore through the fabric. So I stitched like a couple of pieces of fabric. So it looks like a, you know, like a cartoon version of a plaster. It looks like that. And when I was, about 11, I think, I stood on his nose and it broke. And I cried and cried and cried. And then went and bought a new nose and sewed it on. But, you know, I was 11, so it's all wonky. I love him so much. And all my life, I've always thought, you know, if there was a fire and it was only me in the house and I didn't have to worry about my son or my housemate or anything else, the first thing that I would throw out of the window to save it would be Rover. If there was like a flood warning or an impending apocalypse, I'd be like, right, where's Rover? He is the most important thing to me. And I just can't imagine putting him in a box and posting him to another person. I can't. I would love for him to be restored. I really would. But I also could not part with him long enough to have it done. But anyway, I just wanted to tell you about this beautiful thing that exists because it is gorgeous. And it's very comforting and soothing to watch. And I was hoping that you might find it comforting and soothing to watch too. What else do I want to talk about today? I rediscovered an old album that I used to listen to so much when it came out. And it's the album Leftism by Leftfield. That dates me, doesn't it? But when I was at university, this album came out and I love it so much. The other thing that I really love about that album is that when we used to host parties at the houses I shared as a student, at one point, for example, I shared a house with five other people and we had quite a few parties. And we were all really different people. We were all studying different subjects, apart from one other person in the house who was studying the same course as me. And we all had different friends and different types of friends. And being me, I had the most gloriously nerdy alternative friends. And by alternative, I mean just as in, you know, all of the goths. And because I was a bit of a lightweight goth myself, I didn't go all in, but I definitely very much leaned in that direction. And we were all role players and we were really into like Vampire the Masquerade and we were just a bunch of complete geeks and nerds. And other people in the house had friends who were very much not like that. And yet, it didn't matter who was there at the party. If you put that album on, everyone would start dancing to it. Doesn't matter who it was. Everyone danced to it. The other album that was like that, actually, was Jagged Little Pill by Alanis Morissette, if I remember that correctly. But there was a point when everybody seemed to be listening to that and it didn't matter who you were, what you were studying, what you were into, what your aesthetic was. Everyone danced. It's so weird. Oh, and the first Garbage album as well. The one that's pink and fluffy on the cover. I can't remember the name of it. That was another one that everybody loved. But anyway, I stumbled across it on a playlist. And I can't remember where I was looking. And it was like, oh, I remember that album. And I went and listened to it. I've still got it on CD. And I've got an old 90s hi-fi. That's a whole other story. I'll have to talk about that in another episode. But I've got this old 90s hi-fi that I collected in bits from various people. And I went and put it on. And oh, it's so good. I danced. It was great. So I just wanted to express my love for that album. It's horribly dated, probably. But I find it really hard to know whether something is dated or not now, because it's like that. I know that album so well, I don't have any distance from it. So it just sounds like that album to me. So yes, I just wanted to express my love for it. The other thing from the 90s, I think. Oh, I should have looked that up before I started talking. feels like it's about the right time. Or if it was, it was very early 2000s. I watched again last night, Addams Family 2. I really love that movie. I haven't seen the new Wednesday Netflix show. I haven't seen it. But that movie, I just have such a soft spot for. And there were so many points when I was watching it and I was watching Fester and going, that's me. The bit when he's really falling for Debbie and he just is so awkward. It's me. I related so hard. I love that movie. I love the baby in it. It's just like a joke. Every other line is a joke. It's ridiculous. Just absurd. I love the Camp Chippewa destruction at the end. I love what Wednesday does there. I just love it. If you haven't seen it for a while, I recommend going back and enjoying the sheer frivolity of it. It's ridiculous. But yeah, Fester, I love Fester so much. And of course, that's Christopher Lloyd. And he played Emmett Brown, Doc Brown, from the Back to the Future trilogy. And there was a period of my teenage years where I was obsessed with those movies. And Doc Brown was my hero. Absolutely my hero. And his whole thing of, if you put your mind to it, you can accomplish anything. I lived by that, you know, because I didn't understand systemic barriers to things. I did not understand the world in the way that I understand it now. But that was what I lived by. And if I wanted to achieve something, then I would really put my mind to it. And I just loved his performance as Doc Brown. I guess because I'm so nerdy as well, he was the character that I really related to until Clara came along in number three. And then I was like, that is the first time I've seen somebody in a movie like this that I'm like, I really relate to her. Oh, dear. What else did I want to talk about? I've been thinking a lot lately about being shy, continuing the theme of watching Uncle Fester in the Addams Family and how shy he is. I've been thinking about this a lot lately because I recently went to a one-day LARP event. It wasn't even a day, it was an afternoon and an evening, and it was an in-character wedding. And my character is friends with one of the people getting married, and that's why she was invited. And it was in a beautiful location. It was in, I don't know how it's pronounced, if it's Tretawr or Tree Tower in Wales. And so it's this old, 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 like medieval building, and then a ruined castle across the other side of the field. It was the most incredible venue for a wedding set in the Empire LARP universe. So it all looked perfect. It was great. And it was wonderful swanning around a medieval building and a castle ruin in a ridiculous medieval gown. Great stuff. But I only knew like three or four people that were there. And there were lots and lots of people I didn't know. And I felt so shy, even though I went there with one of my besties. Even though I could always go and talk to her if I wanted to, I just felt so cripplingly shy. I was thinking about it afterwards and thinking about how hard I find these things. And even though I was role playing, you know, it wasn't like I was walking into the room, it was my character. But, you know, my character is also cripplingly shy because there are some things that need hard skills. And if you don't have them, they're really hard to role play. And I don't have the hard skill of being incredibly confident and, you know, socially able. And it's something that I've been thinking about a lot lately because I would like to be less shy. And I guess that might be one of the reasons why I've started this podcast up again as well, and why I'm filming this too, because there's a part of me that wants to stop hiding away, which is what I've been doing for so long. I've started over the last year and a bit, I've started to go out into the world a lot more, and I've had some really enjoyable experiences. But I'm still really, really shy. And I would love to be able to do more things. And there are things that are happening. Like there have been a few parties and I've thought I'd love to go to that. But no, I only know one person there and it will be really awkward and I won't know what to do. I'd like to get over that. So I've been starting to think about how to approach it, how to solve that problem. I was thinking about so many other aspects of my life. This is where the autism is going to really shine. That in particular, in any kind of situations where I have to interact with other people, I have scripts that I rely upon. I know how to behave in scenarios because I've either learnt or I've observed and practiced or whatever. And so there are things that I know how it works and it's fine. And as soon as I come across a situation where I absolutely do not know how it works, I find it cripplingly difficult to do. And I was thinking about social skills and that at parties, like I love parties. I can't go to lots and lots and lots because I get very burnt out and I find it very hard to process information. If it's a noisy party, I find it hard in terms of sensory information. I find it very, very tiring to keep focused on one conversation. But anyway, I have been to many parties in my life and I've loved them. And I would like to go to more of them. And I was thinking about how the skills of like talking to people once I have been introduced to somebody, I'm okay with. I know how to do that. And that's because I learnt from my dad, who had house parties when I lived with him for a portion of my teenage years. And every 2 weeks we had a huge house party and I would literally just watch how the adults socialized. And I can remember standing in a doorway and watching a particular conversation between two people and learning from it, like data from Next Generation. And I would just go and replicate that behavior. I learned like social rules and how to do things, etc., etc. But the thing I didn't learn from that period of my life where I acquired so many really useful and really critical social skills was how to approach people I don't know. If I'm introduced to somebody, I can cope. It's absolutely fine. And I have good days and bad days. Everybody does, right? But I am fundamentally a shy person and I rely upon scripts and ways to do things to get over that shyness. But when it comes to going somewhere where there are lots of people I don't know, I get really stressed about it and I get really anxious. And I was thinking about how other things, like other skills I've had to acquire, I've developed these kind of pattern scripts to use. So I've been trying to come up with a way to cope with going to a place where I don't know people and striking up conversations. Which is a weird thing. Now I think about it, you know, like I'm 47 years old. You'd think I'd have learnt this by now, but no. And I just kind of implode and I just never want to talk to people. But I think the other aspect of this, you know, is that there is some bit of me that is just constantly expecting people to just not want to talk to me or not want to know me. And that is just brain weasels. And I'm working very hard on challenging those brain weasels. And I wanted to talk about this, I think, because I was thinking that there may be people listening to this or watching this who are the same, who struggle with social things. I wanted to say you're not alone. And I think I wanted to share how I've been thinking about it and trying to figure it out. I remember I went to, I think it was the first Worldcon I went to, which was in Chicago. My goodness, that was years ago. And it was an amazing experience. And I went to one of the big room parties. I think it was being run by a publisher. I can't remember who did it. It might have been the tour party. I can't remember. I've slept and drunk since then. But anyway, I didn't know anybody there. There were like two or three people I knew at the convention and they weren't there yet. And it was one of those situations of, oh no, oh no, I don't know anybody and I don't know what to do. I thought, right, I've got to do something. I've got to go and talk to somebody. And so I saw this guy who was standing alone and he looked friendly. And I went over and I said, I'm feeling like a complete lemon because I don't know anybody. Can I talk to you? And he was like, sure. And we struck up a conversation and he turned out to be one of the loveliest people on the planet. It was Maurice Broaddus, who's another author. Honestly, he is so lovely. it was great. And I had a great time. And then I had a couple of drinks and I relaxed. And then I met Chuck Wendig for the first time at that party. And we got very drunk together and it was hilarious. And we had great fun and it was brilliant. But I remembered recently that moment where I decided, well, I've got to go and talk to somebody. And I went up to him and said, I feel like a lemon and I don't know anybody. Can I talk to you? And I was thinking, well, I could just do that. I could do that when I go to role-playing events and I don't know anybody. I could just say, hey, I don't know anybody here. So can I come and talk to you? My name is, and what's your name? So that's that. I'm going to test that the next time I have to go to a social event where I don't know people. You know, before I start to record this, I've like thought, okay, well, I'll write down some things that I want to talk about, and then I end up talking about something completely different. What's that about? I guess this is a response to me not overstructuring the episodes. I'm just talking about whatever comes into my head. Let me know in the comments or wherever you're connected to me online. Let me know if this is okay, because I have no idea. I'm flailing at this completely different way of approaching this podcast. But I hope you're enjoying it. That's, you know, the main thing when I was thinking about this and like, oh, what should I talk about and things, is I just want there to be a space where you can just listen to somebody talking about something that doesn't matter. I listen to quite a lot of podcasts, which are really, really interesting. And they're about really fascinating and often quite important things. I think that there is room in this world for podcasts that really are not about very much at all, that they're just there to make you feel relaxed. That's what I hope that this is making you feel relaxed. There was something else I was going to talk about. Oh, I remember now. So continuing with this thread of being shy, I saw a Star Trek Next Generation episode the other day. And I was going to say all of my life. I mean, all of my life from the age of like 14, 15, which is when I first started watching Next Gen, I really related to Data. And going back and watching the show since being diagnosed as autistic and watching Data and going, oh boy, there were some clues. I've always related to him. And I still do. There are so many like Data moments in the show where I'm like, oh God, I've done that. That is something I've done. I've completely misinterpreted something, or I've completely not seen or heard the subtext in a conversation and said something that's turned out to be stupid or funny because I didn't get it, like Data does quite often. Anyway, it's one of my like really nerdy special interests. So like I have so many thoughts and feelings about Star Trek Next Gen, and it's really, really important to me. It's been such an important part of my life. And, you know, it's deeply flawed. I know it's deeply flawed. I know that there are things which are stupid and inaccurate and inconsistent and things that are just ridiculous. It's a TV show, space opera. Come on. But I still really love it. And so I was, you know, something I've been dabbling with the idea of for ages is doing a podcast where I like do an episode at a time and talk about an episode. The other thing that I've always wanted to do as well is doing a thing where you watch an I record my thoughts about an episode whilst watching the episode so that you can then listen along. So it's like, You know, like when you sit with one of your best mates and you watch your favourite thing, and it's something you've both seen a million times, so it's okay to talk at the same time as watching it. Usually I hate that. But if it's something that I've seen as many times as a Star Trek Next Gen episode, because I've seen them dozens of times, it's okay. And I was wondering about recording something, so it's just like sitting with your bestie watching a favourite TV show that you've seen so many times that it's okay to talk about it and just like talk about things I think when I'm watching the episode. I don't know whether anyone would like that or be interested in that, whether I would have the time, I don't know. I find it so hard to juggle different projects, and there's so much that I want to do, and it's just finding the time. And yeah, I don't know. Let me know what you think. Let me know. Right. I think that's probably enough burbling for this episode. So I hope that between the time you listen to this episode and the time you hear my voice again, that you are given something to eat that you've never eaten before and it's delicious. I don't care what it is. I don't know what it might be. I don't care if it's a cake or a particular sandwich that you've never had before. I hope that somebody either suggests it to you and you get it yourself, or somebody even better makes it for you with love, and that you take that first bite and go, oh, I've never had that before. That's gorgeous. I hope you have that. Take care, my lovelies. Bye. You've just listened to an episode of Tea and Sanctuary. If you enjoyed the show and would like to be an absolute bless poppet, you can help to keep the teapot full and the podcast ad-free by becoming a patron at patreon.com/Emma Newman. If you'd just like to buy me a nice cup of tea, go to ko-fi.com/Emma Newman. This episode was brought to you by 5 cups of tea, a freshly baked flapjack, and an agreement made with the local fox. Go forth, my marvellous treasures, and be lovely to each other.